Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're in your shed.
We are. On Bank Holiday Monday.
On Bank Holiday Monday, exactly. Yeah, we're slaving away, aren't we, on the old 90.
I thought, yeah, because we just had like a really nice milestone moment of fitting the rear tub. And we said, right, now that we sound enthusiastic, let's record a podcast.
Now that we're not swearing at stuff, let's crack on. And it does look it looks amazing, doesn't it?
It really does. I'm really, really impressed. Just, you know, to have like a remanufactured chassis in a remanufactured rear tub, and they've only met for the first time.
Mm.
Everything is lined up so far. So probably famous last words, but so far, so good.
I was going to say, having a quick peek down the body line, the waistline on the tub does match up with the bulkhead nicely already. So hopefully, once it's set and we're back and we're lining everything up, it'll be good to go.
Yeah, talking about waistlines, we're currently eating some cake.
We, on your trip to Yorkshire, you picked up some very nice fruit cake.
Called Yorkshire Brack.
Yorkshire Brack. It's quite sweet, isn't it, for fruit cake?
It is, but we've had it before. And we just said, like, we were filming a Land Rover at the Overland, and we ate half each. Do you remember?
When was that?
That was, we were freezing cold, and we didn't have any lunch. When we were, like, attempting our first ever go on YouTube.
Oh, we had that enormous camera, didn't we?
And no idea how to use it. We thought we were like a TV crew, and we were like turned up. It was that V8, 300 TDI to V8.
Yeah, that does ring a bell. Back when it was still a TDI.
Yeah, so we filmed that first, didn't we?
Yeah.
And like a year later, we went back.
That's it. Yeah.
And we ate half a cake.
Oh dear.
Yeah, those are the days.
To set the scene, though, we're sat in Steve's garage behind the 90. It's looking great. We're sat on garden chairs. The phone, which I'm using today to record the podcast, is balanced on top of Steve's welder. So, yeah, it's a dream studio, really, isn't it? We are the absolute pinnacle of professionalism.
But that's it. So at least it's authentic.
It is authentic. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't normally sit down on a chair. I never bring chairs in here. And I'm looking around here.
Yeah, there's never any space for them.
No, there's no space for chairs or us. And I'm just looking around going, oh no, look at all this stuff that they're sorting out. But I've had a couple of days in here tinkering on. It's been good.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a step forward to like I say, even just sit the tub on, which is a big step in the right direction. So, yeah, it's looking pretty good. And hopefully, you know, the ball of momentum will keep on rolling, and we'll see this ready for LRM Live next May, won't we, Steve?
Yes. And this goes out to Jamie, who is beavering away in his shed probably now. Defender Restore is probably in his shed right now. He's miles ahead of me.
Can you imagine how good this will look next to his, though? He's got a green station wagon, hasn't he? And this
yes,
is red.
But he's gone to town.
Yeah.
Do you know, I've said this before. I built my servo up yesterday and put it back on, put the brake master cylinder on.
Yeah.
And riveted the VIN number plate back on. Stuff like that. It's things like that that really inspires you to crack on. And because Jamie's doing such a good job, I'm like, oh, that bracket's a bit dirty. I can't put that on because Jamie wouldn't do that.
Not to be outdone. So, you're setting the theme, Jamie. You're setting the trend.
Yeah, you're setting the trend. Especially like a home workshop job. It's brilliant.
Well, it's great, isn't it? That's the magic of Land Rovers, really, is you can actually do a lot of this stuff at home. And doesn't matter whether you're doing a quick re-chassis like my Series 3 was and a quick coat of paint with a brush, or a proper every nut and bolt, no stone unturned, new build, if you like.
Exactly.
The nature of them is brilliant. You can do it all at home. But yeah.
But the other day, I have discovered the worst potential job you can ever do in a workshop.
Ah.
And it involves a grease gun.
Right.
So I find going round things with grease nipples quite therapeutic. So I do my prop shafts, I do the Penman trailer. Anywhere there's a grease nipple, I'll put some grease in.
You're all over it.
And all of a sudden, the grease gun's run out. And I'm like, ah, okay, so what do you do here then? It's got a cartridge in it.
Yes.
The number one worst job in the world. Especially when you don't read the instructions and you take it apart both ends.
Yeah.
You try and get the grease. Oh, my God.
I can relate, to be fair. I don't like refilling grease guns. It's a job I despise.
So I will use it more sparingly going forward, so that I have to do that any time soon.
Yeah, cartridge of grease does last a fair while, but if you're doing more than one Land Rover and you're being like meticulous, like you say, your trailer as well, it does soon go.
It does go, yeah.
But I've got a variety of grease, or have tried a variety of grease guns over the years, and some promise the earth, like quick release, quick refill, no mess, no fuss, and I've never known anything further from the truth.
I had it in the vise. People are going to think, what on earth was I doing? I had it in the vise trying to push the spring back in, which incidentally is all covered in grease. It's all bending around.
Right.
Oh, trying to get that threaded back on. It was not pleasant. So, yeah, won't be doing that anytime soon. Next up, read the instructions. There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do help. But even so, it's a horrible, messy job. And actually, someone asked a question on one of the Facebook groups the other week, actually, and said, like, what's your least favourite workshop job? And I think anything involving CV grease is particularly gross, and it gets everywhere. No matter how careful you are, you're going to be up to your elbows in it, and it goes, just get it on clothes, they're never the same again. It's
that do like crane swivels on steering swivels, yeah, on Land Rovers. Yeah. That is a horrendous, that
thick, molly grease,
properly dirty, stinky job.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but I mean, for the most part, this is what's nice about yours, really, is because everything is new. Or as good as new.
Yeah, but I've been through it, though, with the strip down and the...
Yeah, sure. But you're at the nice bit now. You're putting it back together.
It's at the expensive bit.
The whole thing.
Because everything
expensive.
You look at, that tub's got to go to paint. So today's job, essentially, after we've recorded this, we've got to continue drilling the holes for the rivets that hold the cappings on.
Yep.
Drill the holes for the rear tub into for the rear crossmember.
Yeah.
Seat box...
Yeah,
drill those
everything, through. Everything, sort of do your cap.
I'm going to drill as many holes as I need before it goes to paint, and then it makes it a little easier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's crying out for work. Well, not crying out for work, that's a bit unfair. He wants to keep this momentum going with the bits, so we need to get this tub to him.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'll be exciting to see it in colour, especially with the galvanised, bare galvan. It'll look really, really nice.
Well, I've just realised how scary that's going to be, putting a freshly painted turb on that, because we've just done it dry, haven't we?
Yeah.
And you do catch things. I think you need a third person.
A third person and lots of masking tape to put over the paint to make sure you don't rub it up.
Yeah, because we've just put this on, haven't we? But if that was painted.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But no, it'll be good. It'll be nice when it's painted and back, and you've got your doors ready to go. Just need to do a bit of stripping down the doors.
Yeah,
the hinges off.
Handles off.
And it will soon be all ready to be red.
Yeah. Well, now I'm sticking to the colour.
Yeah, you've made peace with it. I think it's a great colour, and I think you'll, once it's all together, it'll look spot on.
I went to a classic car show yesterday in Stamford.
Oh, how did you get on?
Really lovely gig, actually. I've never put anything in the show, because I always think, you know, when you have to pre-book a car into a show, it's kind of like, I never think, oh, in a year's time, I'm going to book my car into that show.
Right.
A, because I don't know what I'm going to have at the time, because you know what I'm like. And then secondly, what if you're busy doing something else? Anyway, Stamford Meadows, really lovely, lovely show. A few Land Rovers there, actually.
Go on. Anything good? Noteworthy?
Somebody has got a D-Reg 90, slightly big wheels on it, and I thought it work in progress was on the sign.
Right.
And then I sort of looked through the window, and I saw this like auto gear shifter, and all the transmission tunnel was completely like bespoke.
Okay.
Under development. Big Corvette engine in the front.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Yeah, I mean, General Motors, big Corvette. And it was like someone's doing it themselves.
That's cool.
Yeah, not one of these factory builds or, you know.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was good.
Fitting an LS in your garage. That's not many people would do.
No, definitely. But the vehicle looked quite normal. Typical, yeah, slightly bigger wheels and jacked up suspension.
Bit of a sleeper, though. You wouldn't expect a
Corvette engine. No, not in something as old as that, and as kind of authentic, shall we say, in terms of its bodywork.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
And there was a fire tender there from, had some Welsh fire service on it, Series 3, I think it was, 101.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Do you know what? I was looking at this 101, and the door was open, and I thought, I've never owned one. And I would quite like to.
They are, honestly, it's a shame that they're all 10 grand plus now, because I would love to have one. Imagine.
But I don't think you'd lose money on it.
Yeah, but you've got to have the money there to buy one.
Yeah, yeah. But it's only like, I think it's one of those itches I might have to scratch one day.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I've got absolutely no room, no inclination, no space, and I haven't got 10 grand.
101s are a bit like stage ones and series ones and things like that as well, in that parts aren't exactly easy to come by. I know there's 101 parts does a lot of reproduction stuff, but there's always going to be, it's never going to be as easy as a Defender or a normal series to get bits for.
Yeah, yeah. Tell you what was growing on me. You're gonna be surprised here.
Go on.
L322s.
Oh, okay, yeah. Seeing the light now.
There was a lovely metallic blue one, an unusual colour actually, yesterday. Standard. And I just thought, ooh, that's a lot of car for the money.
They are. They're really, really nice. I really enjoy them, as you well know. But obviously there's L322 news this week. The Queen's L322 sold at Iconic Auction.
Oh, right. Again?
I believe so, yes.
Didn't we not look round it like a year ago?
It feels like it, yeah. I can't remember if that was the exact same one. This is certainly from her estate as well. Supercharged.
Yeah, but this is like the Clarkson spec, isn't it?
Well, in terms of colour. Yeah, it's Tonga Green, 4.2 supercharged, ex-Queen Elizabeth II. Do you know how much it sold for?
I have absolutely no idea.
Would you like to have a guess? It sold at Iconic Auctions. What date was it?
I don't know.
Recently. Last week?
Well, I should know that. Oh, no, I don't.
Saturday the 23rd of August.
£60,000.
£175,500.
I think that's ludicrous.
It's a lot of money, isn't it?
So £170,000 more than it's really worth.
If it, I mean, yeah, but you're paying for the. We spoke about this before.
We have
with the Defender, didn't we? But this is next level. I mean, it's a lovely car, but yeah, I mean, it's done 120k. It's not been sat around. 175.
And how many miles did the Queen drive it?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? You're never going to prove. You never.
She may have driven a 10,000 of it. Who knows?
Yeah. But it's got that provenance, hasn't it? People like that stuff. I don't know if you saw on my Facebook, I actually put the 110 up for sale last night for about 45 minutes and then I took the ad down because I didn't want to sell it yet.
I didn't see it.
I've got the itch for something else though. And you know what I've been thinking about recently is modern classics. What's going to be the next thing? So those
what,
of you...
in Land Rover terms, you mean? Yeah. I presume. Because this is LRM podcast.
I mean, yeah.
We can
talk about the stuff, but the... I think, I mean, they've already started, but I think the P38 is really going to come into its own soon. I think the 4.6 HSEs, the Holland and Holland's already gone up.
Yes.
Things like the autobiography, the Westminster, the sort of more limited stuff, that's all going to skyrocket soon.
So do you think that it has to be a 4.6 to skyrocket?
Not necessarily, but I think they're the most desirable.
They're okay. I mean, I've driven a couple of them.
Mm.
Really?
Yeah.
You're thinking of getting one?
Possibly. I know them reasonably well mechanically.
To waft around in at the weekend?
Well, just to sort of have as a nice, I don't know, I kind of like that era, you know. Oh, little spoiler, if you like, for next month's Land Rover Monthly magazine, which we're sending to print next week. An exclusive interview with a very important man from Land Rover PR from the late 90s, early 2000s. Tons of amazing photography and images and insider information from that era, which was, in my mind, the golden age of Discovery 1, P38, early Disco 2. That pivotal time for Land Rover. Do not miss it in the November issue of LRM, which is on sale very soon. I honestly cannot encourage you enough to go out and buy it. It is fantastic. Gary Pusey once again knocked it out of the park. Don't miss it. It's brilliant. I'm no celebrity fanboy, but I believe one of the Jenners posted a little while ago on their social media about a P38. I think they've got an early 2000s one, so that'll probably rile people up and think, ooh, this... celebrity likes them, so therefore they must be cool.
Who was that saying?
One of the, you know, the Jenners, you know, like Kendall Jenner, is it? Something to do with the Kardashians, I think.
Oh, okay.
Well,
if it's good enough for the Kardashians, it's good enough for Martin, exactly. Donnelly.
Well, this is it, he says.
It's really.
But it does show that they're getting recognition from people who aren't, you know, diehard Green Oval fans, people are recognising. Because design-wise, obviously, the P38 was really controversial, I guess, when it came out, in that, well, people thought it looked like a metro cab. Some people did. Other people thought it looked too different to the classic to remain a proper Range Rover. And personally, I think now, looking back, they got it about right.
Yeah, it's only when you look back, I think, when you realise something was right, if you know what I mean.
Well, in terms back of my design. When the L322 first appeared in the pages of Land Rover Owner in the news section, with its big glass square headlights and the slab sides, I thought, oh, I don't know about that. But now, obviously, it's aged really nicely.
You see, you're talking about P38s from an investment point of view, but knowing you, you won't keep it long enough to find out.
Well, do you know, this is the trouble with me, is for me, the real joy I get from most Land Rovers, most vehicles, I guess, is actually getting them a bit downtrodden, bringing them back up. Mm. And then that's the satisfaction, really. I like driving them, don't get me wrong, but I get the most pleasure out of doing that.
Good job we're here, really, doing this.
I mean, this is an extreme example, but yes.
I mean, bank holiday Monday, nonetheless. It's not even a working day for us, is it?
No. I mean, this is a full rebuild. It's not a rescue or a recommission job. It's a proper...
It was once upon a time when I first got it.
What was it like before you... Oh, in fact, you've done a video on it, haven't you?
It was not crusty. It was savable. And we did. We got an MOT on it with... We probably put 400 quid's worth of parts into it.
Right.
Paid our mate Norfolk Nigel to do some welding, because it was over Norfolk way anyway.
Right.
And then went and picked it up with an MOT. It was perfect. So a couple of grand in and it was done.
Oh, but cool.
I blame lockdown. Sitting here in the sun, we had the best summer, didn't we, in the first lockdown?
Yeah.
And COVID times, and that's when I started taking it a bit.
You thought, do you know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to re-chassis my Land Rover.
Mm.
You're here, really.
Part of the way through.
Yeah.
Anyway, last week, I asked our erstwhile listeners what their opinion would be on the roof tent situation I find myself in. Which vehicle.
I've seen a couple of responses, and I completely agree.
We've had a lot of responses. Starting with Andrew Cartwright. He says, "Hi, Martin, just listened to this week's podcast about your roof tent dilemma, and I had to drop you a note. We took our old ex-military 110, 2.5 naturally aspirated, with roof tent down through France and Spain for 3 weeks this summer. Not exactly speedy, goes without saying.
Well, yeah.
But sticking to the D roads made for some amazing scenery. Barely saw another car, and we always got where we needed to go without any stress. Honestly, it couldn't have been a better trip. We're off to the Highlands in October and already plotting another European road trip for next summer. Happy chugging. Cheers, Andy." And he sent over some great pictures. Look at that, next to a Citroën DS.
Yeah, no.
It's cool, isn't it? That looks lovely.
Yeah, no, it does look good.
A great bit of camping there, Andrew. Yeah, I mean, that is the... I'm erring on the side of putting it on the 110 if it stays. Because it can't get that much slower, can it? That said, we went to the pub in it the other day, didn't we? And it was actually all right.
We went to a meeting, didn't we? And that was my first go down the road in it since you'd finished it. We only had a little walk and drive around the local roads, didn't we? And
It
was a decent trip.
And it wasn't bad.
It was quicker than I remember them to be.
I think the 1.6 ratio transfer box helps, because...
Very low geared.
Yeah, very low geared. The you soon run out of steam, but you get there at a reasonable rate, if you like. It's not awful. I quite like sort of trundling around in it. I don't know if I've got an itch for something else. The other modern classics that sort of spring to mind are early Freelander 2 i6. They're quite rare.
i6 is the
3.2 petrol.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody at the Auckland show with one.
Yes, Jordan.
Jordan. He loves it.
Yeah.
It sounded really nice as he pulled away.
I've driven a few when I was a dealer, and they are like a real smooth, wafty...
Volvo engine.
Volvo engine, yeah, that's it. And early three-door Evoque. They'll probably come into their own soon, especially the petrols, the SI4s. They're quite good fun. I don't know if there's many about.
I can't see you in that. It's because you're male and not female, because I don't think it's that kind of car, but I just think...
A lot
of people think they're the female Land Rover, aren't they?
When they were launched, they were aimed at people who were in like a BMW or an Audi, and Land Rover wanted a slice of that market. young professionals, and I think they got a slice of that market.
They so did. They set saw them like everywhere, don't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of them about. Even the early like 12 plate ones, there's still a lot of Evokes on the road. It's good.
I think they're a good solid car.
Discovery 2, we always talk about the like the landmarks and the pursuits and stuff like that. They'll come into their own soon, I think. They're quite a desirable vehicle.
See, I think you should get one of them.
Dear. Yeah. It'd be quite
because it's not like a P38, you're going to be down to sort of 18, 19 to the gallon.
Yeah, V8.
D2, a nice one, you could be up to late 20s, 30 to the gallon.
True.
You could use it more for more things.
Yeah,
but then it's not a treat for a Sunday. You want a car to waft around in on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's a job to know.
I always think that if you go looking for something, just wait and it will find you.
And that's before, normally the way it happens.
Before you know it, you'll be looking out of your window at something.
Indeed, they do pop up when you least expect it. Another piece of correspondence about my the roof tent situation from our friend Tom Bayford, who is a very big fan of the Salmon Sofa, as we well know.
Yes.
He says, good morning. As you're aware, I'm a keen listener to the podcast and look forward to listening each week. Congratulations both to you and Steve for creating an enjoyable show. Thanks very much, Tom. We appreciate it. In the latest podcast, Martin, you mentioned about your roof tent and what to put your roof tent on for camping to create the best experience. Well, you answered this in your podcast as you mentioned the ex-utility company Puma Defender for sale at Anglia Car Auctions. They make great campers. And you should sell all the other Land Rovers and buy yourself a 110 utility and put a pop-top conversion on it. Hashtag pop-top all the utilities. I bet you can't guess what Land Rover Tom's got.
Possibly a pop-top
utility.
110 utility, yeah.
Obviously, I may be a bit biased on this response. Kind regards, Tom Bayford, also a fellow TD5 engine connoisseur from the edges of the New Forest. There you go.
Yeah, if only we had more room and more money, we'd have one of everything.
Yeah, it's
get 101 to sleep in the back. You want something a bit.
The GS body 101s with the big canvas tilts are ridiculously cool.
Oh yeah,
but they're just they're one of those where like you know the military auctions and that had them for like $3,500 years ago, and that was when you wanted to buy one. But now they're like obscene money, even for an absolute wreck.
Yeah, but for good reason, I think.
Yeah, they are. There's not many of them about, is there?
No.
Defender Lexi's got one. Remember Defender Lexi?
Oh, yeah,
on the show at Billing. She's got a pretty cool 101 project, so it'd be interesting to see how that comes along. But yeah, one more. We had a reasonable response about people have got opinions about roof tents. Phil Griffiths, good friend of mine, Phil Griffiths. I was his mechanic for the Welsh Hill Rally a few years ago. Very, very cool.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He says, good evening, Martin. Apologies, but I thought I'd message you properly on here with an actually family-friendly load of dross. Excellent. Steve's roof tent solution, a.k.a. trailer on... Yes, a.k.a. on a trailer, not a roof, is the way forward. Appreciate it's already been covered by Steve in the mag, but I'm sure Darren at Jedi 4x4 could get you a Penman at a reasonable price or a Sankey. No need to carry it around 99% of the time. And when you do, you can choose any of your Land Rovers to tow it with. Cheaper than a TDI in the 110 and more useful when you need to move stuff around. And yes, my good lady wife and the dog would appreciate being able to go in the Freelander. However, we have ascertained you can't tow a Penman with a Freelander.
No. Not legally, you cannot.
No.
Not type approved.
Phil goes on to say, I've been avoiding a roof tent for years, having converted the back of the 110 for me to sleep in and not wanting to own one. But my lad's now old enough to come away competing at off-road events and he really wants a roof tent. I've suggested we build a mezzanine frame for a tent that bolts to my trailer and still allows a Land Rover to be carried underneath. He can sleep in it and I'll stick to the 110. Speaking of which, I totally agree about a less capable vehicle being driven at the limit being more fun than a more capable vehicle being driven. Do you remember Jeremy Coburn's question
this
week?
Yes.
Not for green laning. He said, yeah, don't go churning up lanes. Obviously, it goes without saying. Don't be a dilbert. But yeah, some vehicles being used to the sort of at the maximum of their capability or even in things you might not other necessarily see them being used. I mean, he rallies a Series 3 88 inch, which is really, really cool.
But you're getting the best out of something, aren't you? And you're having the driving of your life, but you're within the legal limits of the road.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Yeah, so his Series 3 88-inch and the old LRO Freelander, which he and Neil used for Targa rallying, he said neither should have been competitive, but it was made all the more fun when we did get a good result. And yes, think back to the Welsh Hill rally you kindly spannered for me on. We beat a few of the Bowler Defender 90s in a car that cost me less than a pair of new Matrix headlights for a new Defender. Absolutely. We did really well in that rally. Well, Phil and Neil did. I sat there eating sweets and cleaning the windows. Yes, I'd always recommend club level off-road motorsport, as I take the view you're not in it to win it, you're there for fun, so it's a different mindset. Aim to enjoy it and do it in something you think is affordable to fix. Absolutely. And segues into the final question, when are you coming trialling? Soon.
You've been asked two or three times, haven't we?
Although Series 3 is ready to go. I think as soon as it winter comes, I'm keen for it. Yeah, 100%. I'm always up for a bit of trialling. I do enjoy it. Something quite nice about V8s screaming in the woods and hot mud and
just
brings back all the memories about why you love Land Rover so much. What are we going to do next then, Stevie? Now that the tub's on, now that we've got we need to drill the holes, and then what's the next step?
I think we should offer up the seat box.
Yes, that's a good idea.
That's going to be next to go to paint.
Yes, indeed.
And then might take a picture for the Instagram.
Yeah, take a picture for the gram.
It looks so cool.
It does. It's amazing how just moving one thing from one side of the workshop to another has sort of filled you with enthusiasm.
Look how much space we've got.
I know.
Not loads. It's not the biggest garage in the world, but...
Get another project in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting... My garage, right, I'm just looking at it. Because, again, sitting in here, you look at it for a bit longer. Often people ask me where this is from, and it's a company called Dunster House.
Right.
So it's a 45 mil, the construction is 45 mil tongue and groove timber.
Right.
Would I buy it again? Probably not, because it moves loads.
Can I ask a question about your garage?
Yes, you can.
When you, did you choose the garage before you poured the slab, or did you go, right, the garage can be this big, then you bought the frame afterwards?
I did the slab myself.
Yeah.
So don't look down underneath there, because it's a bit, there's a bit went a bit wrong.
Well, that's okay.
But it's an authentic slab. No, I knew the size of the garage and it was ordered.
Okay.
And but it was already, the slab is just a little bit bigger than the
got you
the base. What's supposed to happen is the water comes off the roof.
Yeah.
And misses the slab.
Goes on the ground.
Goes on the ground rather than splashes. But on this side, it slightly splashes against the wood.
Right, okay.
Which is not a problem. But this has been up now 7 years.
It looks pretty good for 7 years old.
Yeah, but you can see the wet in the corners. It's a bit annoying. I just think...
See, this is the...
But the cost of timber, like this now, has put in 7 years... is nearly doubled in price.
Really?
To buy it, yeah.
When I've had a brief look at timber frame sheds, garages, whatever, and I've looked at metal ones as well, and neither of them are cheap. But
no,
yeah, the big, like, because you can get away, planning wise, you can get away with like a motorhome garage without jumping through a lot of hoops. But they're just obscene money.
They've relaxed the planning laws in the UK for people that want to do stuff like this.
Right.
This is called a low roof.
Yeah.
Because it's to do with the pitch height within 1 metre of your boundary.
Yes.
Now, I'm not a planning expert, so don't go building something based on what I'm saying. Look it up for yourself. But if you're within a metre of your boundary, fence, line, then it has to be a lower roof than this, as low as this.
Yeah.
Which I think is 2.4 metres.
Yeah, to the eaves.
They're the eaves, and that's the... These are yeah, something like that, to the eaves, with a pitch no greater than whatever.
Yeah, there's all sorts of...
But this isn't high enough to get a Land Rover in and out.
No.
With a roof on. So, but it serves me okay. It's fine.
Well, that's another great thing about the utility body Land Rover series and Defenders is it takes about 20 minutes to get any roof on and off. So
yeah,
you can do like 99% of the work in the garage without the tub sides and the roof and the screen frame on, and then you can roll it out and fit it. So it's not too big of a deal.
Yeah, of course.
But if you add something else, like a Range Rover or a Discovery, it'd be a pain.
It would be a pain in the backside. So then this is more of a workshop rather than to keep your car in.
Yeah.
But actually, where this slab ended up, at the point in which I'd ordered the garage, there's a bit of a lead time at the time, I am over a metre from the boundary, so I could have gone taller.
Yeah, yeah. This is what I need to think. My shed is currently... railway sleepers for, it's a pole barn essentially, so railway sleepers in each corner and along the side with a metal profile sheet screwed to it and a corrugated roof, and it is waterproof.
It's perfectly fine.
It's just I want to build another shed behind it first and then do the, I've got a lot of ideas in my head and no time to achieve any of them, but
do you know what would be nice is some of our listeners shared pictures of their workshops to give you some inspiration.
That would be brilliant.
Because who doesn't want to see in someone else's workshop?
Well, I just want to see what they look like construction-wise, because there's so many different ways of going about it. You can do, like you've done, like a timber building. You can do...
Well, this is like a kit, basically, and it says put that length here and you just keep bashing the tone grooves together.
Yeah.
Interlocking on the corners,
right.
So you'd build up. If you can see that they're off, the corners are sort of.
You could
half and half.
You could lift this on some breeze blocks, if you wanted to make it taller.
You could, yeah, and then all you do then is you extend the doors.
Yeah,
I did think about that, and in fact, if
get a high lift jack under it, and let's crack on.
Yeah, it's a fair old weight. Yeah, what I would do if I was building from scratch again now,
yeah,
and again, yes, timber costs more money, but I would build on a dwarf wall first.
Yeah.
Like at a couple of breeze box height.
Which you're a professional at, because you've done a bricklaying course.
Yeah, an evening class at college, because I've not laid a brick since, but I wanted to know how to...
Yeah, a couple of courses of block and then wood on top.
Then a nice bit of like proper timber, like four by two or something like that, 4 inches wide.
Okay.
As a base plate, tied in with wall ties.
Right.
And then go up. So you're building yourself a frame.
Yeah.
And then I would use decent feather edge boarding.
Right.
Okay. And then you can insulate in your framework and then you could ply... Mm. Or use OSB board on the inside.
You can,
so it's warmer, because this gets really hot in the summer. Like now,
that's it. I mean,
the sun's on it now, it'll get really hot.
Insulation is key, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having that air gap. Because mine is like an oven, as you would have seen in our video on retrimming seats. As soon as the sun hits the top of it, it literally bakes you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, if anyone listening has got a shed that they built or maybe they built it and they decided that they would have done it slightly differently, hit me up with some inspiration. You're listening to the UK's number one outbuilding podcast, editorial at lrm.co.uk. I'd love to see it, because I really need to pull my finger out and actually break ground and build something.
Stop buying Land Rovers then.
Yeah.
You know, give yourself a year off buying another project.
The number of times I've said, this is the last one I'm doing. And then
I've said that for the last 30 years.
The Turbo Freelander was supposed to be the last one I did. And then
How many Lander? I didn't even know you were near that.
No, I know. That was 2020 I sold that.
Okay.
And then the Series 3 came up and then the 110 came up. What have I had? I've had something in between. But anyway, yeah. What I mean is the difficulty is, and we try and encourage people to have a go at stuff in the mag, but I know about Land Rovers. I know nothing about building. So to me, just... getting another Land Rover and focusing my time and attention on that is a lot more natural than trying to do something completely that I've got absolutely no experience in whatsoever.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, You want the perfect fit, not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
You know, I watched your seat retrim the other day, right? And you encourage people just to have a go.
Yeah.
Right? You just need to have a go.
I know.
Because it's only, say if it's timber, it's only timber. And you mess a bit up, right? Okay.
Yeah, I know.
It's only, I think timber is a real lovely thing to use to build from. But I would definitely put it on some brick. A couple of courses of blocks.
Yeah. And then
yeah. And then lighting is important. So look, we've got four LED strip lights in here. I hate working in a shadow. You will never see it. I mean, it does cast shadows, but on that workbench.
It is nice in it, likewise. I think the key, in my mind, the key elements to a really nice garage or place to work, or even just to come and sit in an evening and drink a cup of tea and get away from everything, is insulation, a good floor, which I currently don't have.
Yeah.
My floor is currently pallets with bits of board on top, and it is so dodgy. Lighting and good power, because there's nothing worse than not having enough sockets.
Yeah, so I've got three doubles in here. I could have had more, but I didn't need it. Obviously, we've got like armoured. So that's the other thing, is getting an electrician in to do it properly, because I've got its own consumer unit.
Mine's already set up. The garage is already armoured cable with a proper fuse board and everything. So I just need to tee off that.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Tell us. We've had such a great response about the roof tent thing. If you've built a garage and wish you'd done it a different way, if you've spent years...
Or if you're really proud of it, incidentally, and you don't need to share it anyway.
If you're a supplier and you do kit-build garages or metal outbuildings, editorial at lrm.co.uk. Thanks.
Anyway, back to that camping trailer thing, right?
Yeah.
I think a trailer is the number one thing to have.
I do camping as well. Setup. Yeah, I have to say.
You need space.
You do. It's... Someone else got in touch. I'm really sorry, I haven't got your email to hand because I'm not that organised, and said, why don't you build a frame on the back of the Series 3 and put the roof tent on it? Yes, but also my dog is spoilt and he likes to travel inside a vehicle, not just in a box in the back. And there's reasons why that would be good and there's reasons why it wouldn't. And to be honest... the Series 3 really is my green laning vehicle, and I like having a truck cab because there's less bodywork to bash with.
Yeah, branches. You did. No, that's not the right car to put that on.
No. And plus, by the time you'd got to your campsite, if you were going to like Wales or Scotland or whatever, the last thing you'd want to do is spend any more time with that vehicle, because it's a hot place to be on a long run.
Yeah, no.
I think a trailer, honestly, yeah, a trailer is the way forward, or some sort of standalone pod, or even, dare I say it, just a ground tent.
Yeah. Oh, no, but this, you haven't slept in your tent yet. And when you do, you'll realise they are better.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I'm going to hopefully try it out this Friday. I'm going to give it a go.
I've been to Whitby and back twice in our 90 with the Penman trailer. Now, we don't pack light. And that trailer is 850 kilos.
Yeah.
And I zeroed the mileometer. Brimmed it with diesel, brimmed it again, and I did 28 miles to the gallon.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
In a TD5, I don't think I'll get better than that without the trailer.
Yeah.
But if that roof tent was on top and not in a trailer, I reckon it would be probably down to 25 to the gallon.
Yeah, I can well believe it. It's a job to know, isn't it? It's all about experimenting, isn't it? That's the...
I've experimented, and that is my setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we talk about camping trailers a lot.
We do.
Yeah, people are going to get bored.
It's an issue close to our hearts, though, isn't
it is
at the moment. But
yeah,
it's good. It's good stuff. Steam Rally next weekend. Very excited. My local Steam Rally. I love a Steam Rally.
I haven't been to a single Steam Rally all year.
You should come to it.
What day is it? Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, both days, yeah.
I will come to it.
You should. It's good.
My mother-in-law's coming to stay.
Oh, she loves a steam rally.
She likes a steam rally with a craft fair.
There's crafty bits. There's food and drink and all that jazz. So, yeah.
If there's a happy mother-in-law, you've got a happy wife. You've got a happy wife, you've got a happy
life. It's a knock-on effect. Exactly, yeah. That. So, yeah, I'm keen for that. We normally take the Series 3. I might take the 110 and we'll take the dog if it's not going to be too hot and have a little wander around. You can't beat the atmosphere of a steam rally. It's like childhood.
I really, really love it.
Encapsulated.
I actually think I was born in the wrong era.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you not think?
I think
when you get to steam rally and it takes you back to that a time I didn't even live in.
So the way I look at it is, it's lovely to go to a steam rally and look at all this old stuff, but would you want to rely on that old stuff to do your job?
Yeah, couldn't really put a magazine to press with a...
You wouldn't.
With a stationary engine, could you?
The romance and the nostalgia of the smells and bygone, the thing of a steam rally are absolutely awesome, but would you actually want to spend your life hossing coal into the back of a boiler day in, day out? No.
No, you are right. Yeah, we are spoiled.
I absolutely love a steam rally, though. They're so good.
Do you understand, like, stationary engines?
So... Yeah, I get them. What I find odd about stationary engines are often they're kind of like those few clubs that you see when you go to a car event where they don't really do anything to welcome new members. They just sit in a circle and talk amongst each other and don't actually engage with anyone. Stationary engine owners, you normally see them sat in a chair next to their stationary engine all day.
With an oil can in their hand, just ready to... Yeah, let me get up and
just not actually doing anything, which is fine if that's what you enjoy. But to me, if you're going there as part sharing your passion and your hobby, you should be trying to engage people in that.
See, that's the difference, right? Land Rover people, you see the next generations coming through,
yeah,
don't you? See, I mean, there's the latest issue of the LRN, there's a youngster reading LRN,
yeah,
it's brilliant,
yeah, it's
and
nice.
they're you can clearly see they're going to be Land Rover owners when they're older. Yeah, stationary engines, you don't see many... When I say younger people, I reckon it's post-70
if
years old.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a stationary engine, so I'm
I get why people do it. It's like therapeutic and they can relax sitting in a deck chair with a caravan or their van or whatever and they just display it. But at no point has anyone ever walked up to me and goes, oh, do you want to know anything about my Lister D?
You see it in...
Never.
When the classic cars are showing and classic tractors, things like that, you can, the owner's normally there or around. Mm. You can have a chat with them and they're normally quite like, forthcoming and engaging and, you can have a chat with them. But I don't know if I've ever, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't really ever see that with stationary engine people.
Perhaps because you're not interested in it. You're not looking like you're interested. So therefore, they don't approach you.
I don't know. Interested. It's a job to know, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it is interesting though, and I saw someone post something. Whenever I drive to LRM HQ, there's a guy, and often I think there's normally two guys in the car, an old Austin or something. Like,
yeah.
Daily drive.
Similar colour to
it is. Yeah, it's like a burgundy-ish.
It's burgundy colour. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the weather's doing, rain or shine, they're out in. They
all year round. That car goes round here.
They commute in it to wherever they go.
Yeah.
I saw on Facebook the other day someone. In quite harsh language, saying, who's got a Defender TDI for sale? I'm sick to death of modern stuff. He didn't say what made him, come out with this outburst of hatred for anything modern. But I wonder if people are going to start going the other way now and actually getting hold of more older vehicles and running them longer term, like old mate does in his Austin, because they're so easy to fix and so cheap to run.
It is interesting. I had a conversation yesterday with my mate James, who is waxing lyrical about his latest L322 purchase.
And rightly so. It's just mega low mileage, isn't it?
Mega low mileage. And he's going to retire his Clarkson spec L322 off, which has got about 190,000 miles on the clock.
Okay.
Because that's the car he uses to tow, and he's a TVR specialist.
Right, okay.
And he had his TVRs on the thing yesterday. In fact, he had a lovely 110. For sale.
Oh, the station wagon.
Which is taken in part exchange on a Cerbera. The guy is selling it on commission, basically.
Right.
And I had a look around it yesterday, and 11,995. And that had more people looking around that 110 on his stand at Stamford than his TVRs.
I think they're just so relatable, aren't
they? Yeah. But it's interesting. So it talks about one of his mates was there who I was chatting to. He's got a modern BMW car, right?
Mm-hmm.
20, I can't remember the year. Just out of dealer warranty, anyway.
Oh, quite new then.
The headlight failed.
Right.
£1,600.
Yeah, it's mad.
So his knee-jerk reaction to that is, it's got to go, and I just want something simple.
Yeah, I totally get it.
So I think, and that's the problem. People are buying these modern cars, and whatever they are, could be a new Defender. How much is a headlight for a Defender? I don't know.
Well, as Phil just said in that thing earlier, less than it costs to prepare a Freelander for rallying.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think, actually, we're coming into that sort of time period now, mid to late 80s, early 90s, where you can get something with decent sound deadening, air conditioning, comfy seats that you could drive every single day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would cost you peanuts to run. In fact, a friend of mine, I say I advertised the 110. It was on Facebook for like 45 minutes before I decided not to sell it. I'm very much on the fence about whether to get rid of it or not, but a good friend of mine has expressed an interest in it since I bought it, and he wants it for commuting. He doesn't do a huge commute, but he likes it because it's so simple. There's no turbo, there's no power steering, there's no DPF, no EGR valve, no all the stuff that you hear failing on new stuff. This is completely devoid of technology.
Thing is, though, you could probably get a more modern driving Land Rover that's still simple. I.e., really a TD5 or even a TDI.
I think the latest 300s are probably the sweetest of the sweet spots, in my opinion. You've still got completely mechanical injection. You've got no CAN bus or anything like that. And it's just, there's definitely a shift, I think, in what people are buying. It's really interesting.
But people get spoilt with modern cars.
Yeah, they do.
They do everything for you.
I have to say, whenever I borrow, or I'm lucky enough that Land Rover lend me a car, like a press car to have on test or whatever, like Velar or Range Rover Sport, you drive it and it's lovely, it's great, absolutely brilliant. And then I get back in my 2007 Freelander 2 and it is like going back into the Stone Age. The build quality difference is just enormous.
But it's what you get used to, and it's what, of its time, that would have been a luxury car.
Yeah, it would, yeah.
It's only because we're literally spoiled to know that they keep moving things on. And you see it in the motorcycle industry now. One of the most selling motorcycles in the UK is Royal Enfield.
Yeah.
Because it's gone back to single or twin cylinder, simple bike with no electrics, no TFT dash clocks or anything like that. It's very analog. And that's what people are craving, simplicity.
There's a lot to be said for it, definitely.
You can do your own valve timing with a screwdriver and some feeler gauges.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to strip an entire engine out at £1,000, you know, dealer charge or something, just a valve check service.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, we are seeing it.
Yeah. Strange. If you've, in fact, we had a letter, didn't we, about a guy who's given up his, I think he had an Audi or a BMW on PCP, and he's given it back and he's on the hunt for a late Freelander 2. That's talking correct. Of Freelander 2s, we've been living up to our names as influencers, because my friend Kieran messaged me the other day and said, entirely your fault, by the way, # influencer. He has bought a Stornoway Grey 2007 Freelander 2 HSE TD4.
Nice.
Very similar to mine.
Mm.
Few niggly bits to do on it. It's got a cream interior, which he doesn't like that much. But, he's a hardcore Freelander guy. He loves the real early pre-facelift stuff. He had an L series for a long time. I think he'll be very, very chuffed to bits with his new purchase. I'm still very happy with mine. She's still racking up the miles. Just getting the job done.
Yeah, long may it continue.
Due a service, actually. I need to order the bits. You get through a lot of oil and filters when you get up there, you feel almost guilty. You know, I like to service them a little bit early anyway. But
well, yeah, longevity and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And touch wood, the turbo's still hanging in there, probably thanks to my
I've not mentioned the turbo for quite some months.
No, I've been quiet about it. But
yeah, unlike the turbo. That's not been quiet
about
it.
It's a little bit whistly, but I think it's fine.
Yeah. But if it was going to let go, they'd have done it by now.
I think so. I say that. I better touch wood again, because you can't be too careful, can you?
No.
But yeah, what's... Right, we better crack on, haven't we, seen?
Yeah, well, coffee's empty.
Depleted.
And we've got jobs to do.
Yeah. We need to get the holes drilled. We need to measure stuff up. We need to get the seat box on, drill more holes there. But yeah, she's coming along.
And then send it to paint.
Get more stuff made red.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
It's a bit like my bank balance.
In the red.
Well, it will be once I pay for the paint.
Not a cheap job, is it, getting something sprayed?
Not really, but a lot of people don't want to do it.
Really?
Yeah. Land Rover seems to be a car that, back in the day, people just blow a Land Rover over. Now people want perfection, and because of the way the panels are, and people, most paint jobs, don't want to do it.
A lot of the time, I guess, this must be super common for paint shops, is people go, oh, yeah, no, nothing's that bad. And then they dump off like a completely, you know, all the screen frames all corroded and, you know, the doors are flaking. There's electrolysis everywhere. And actually something that someone deems not that bad is nowhere near ready enough to be painted. So it needs to go for blasting, needs to be sealed, epoxy, rubbed down, blah, blah, blah. It takes forever. So, yeah, I can understand where they're coming from.
I wouldn't want to get involved.
It's a skill I would like to learn is body working and paint.
I think the only way you're going to learn that is if you had a job in a body shop as an apprentice and you went through the pain of it all.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I don't think it's something you could learn adequately enough to do your own job at home. Plus the environmental impacts of doing it at home.
Yeah.
One thing to consider, you know, the modern paints with isocyanate on it, so you can't be blasting that into the atmosphere.
No.
Not really. Not. People do.
Yeah.
I tend not to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not
worth your health, is it?
It's always
air-fed masks and all that stuff.
You can get all the bits, can't you? But like you say, there's got to be code and stuff, especially if you're doing it for money. But it's something I've always admired people. There's a guy I know, he's done a lot of welding and bodywork for me in the past on the yard where my unit is, and he's just an absolute wizard, and I watch him in awe every time I go in there, and he's just like, if I could have a tenth of the skill and patience he's got, I would love to learn how to do bodywork. But yeah, you can't do it all, can you?
No.
But
you cannot.
Interesting. Right, we should better crack on, hadn't we?
Yeah, we should. I've got a guy coming around in about half an hour.
Oh, you've done some marketplacing, haven't
Marketplace
you?
To sell some my old cappings.
Yes.
Which I no longer need. Because I didn't know there was a difference when you remove a bulkhead of the Land Rover on a tub.
Yeah.
You need a different kind of capping.
Yes, one without the little sticky in bit.
Yeah, and these ones are from YRM.
That's the technical term. Your new ones are they?
These ones are from YRM, yeah.
Make all their own now, I've seen them.
They make them, and they make them apparently the right length, because if you just chopped the bits off these ones.
Yeah.
So they don't go across the bulkhead behind the seats.
That's it.
They would be too short.
Ah.
Apparently.
Okay.
So top tip, if you are doing that, change cappings at the same time. Make
yes.
it life a lot easier and neater.
I've seen their jig. It's very impressive the way they're made. It's
I mean, look at them. They're like, you know.
They're proper.
They do look good.
Right. Anyway.
Let's crack on.
Before we crack on, we must say, please, leave us a little rating or a review on the podcast on your preferred streaming platform, if you don't mind. Drop us a little like, follow on Instagram and Facebook, Land Rover Monthly. You're Steve Miller Automotive. I'm Land Rover Martin.
And what I'll do is I'll upload a picture now of this, and you'll see us sitting here with the tub.
Yeah, like in sort of real time, but not.
Only a couple of days. This goes out on Wednesday.
It does, yeah. And it's
so like, if you're listening to what, yeah, so literally in less than 48 hours, you could be seeing what we're doing.
Exactly. So no, it'll be good. Right. Let's not lose momentum. Let's crack on. Thanks for listening, as always, and we will catch you next week.
Bye for now.